You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sedano and LZ with you here on 710 ESPN. So we're going to try to effort to find David Fizdale here in just a moment. Real quick, though, we might as well squeeze in some Dodger talk, LZ, because I think it's important that we get them in. But I want to tell people real quick, if your vehicle's due for service, head to your neighborhood Valvoline Instant Oil Change, all right? So here's the deal. Home of the 15-minute drive-through oil change for over 30 years, Valvoline has provided quick and convenient automotive maintenance services for busy people like you. No dragging the kids to a dirty waiting room at Valvoline. You stay in your car nice and safe while the expert technicians make sure your ride is in peak performance. Oil changes, tire rotations, transmissions, and more. Just pull up, drive in, and drive out in less than 15 minutes. Visit their website, SoCalOilChange.com, for locations and game-winning coupons off your next Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Curtis, Fizz hit me back. He's ready. But in the interim, LZ, what is your thoughts, just overriding thoughts on the Dodgers and Brewers?
Well, this Brewers team, they're very unconventional.
They are. And
they're going to throw all sorts of things at Dave that's going to require him not to rely upon stats and analytics to make decisions, but rather his gut. Mm-hmm. That's what happened the last time they faced off in the postseason, and I think it's going to be more of the same this year, that this is going to be a series that's going to be Dave Roberts managing and not just simply plug and playing.
Yeah, I would agree. Council and those guys are very unconventional. They haven't played all that well this year, but I do think as long as they can get to their starters, they should be fine, and the Dodgers should advance fairly easily. Like, I'm not super concerned about Milwaukee. I think that's actually the best possible matchup for the Dodgers in this wild card round of best of three, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. But
it's so crazy.
Let's talk about the NBA Finals, which starts tomorrow. You can catch the action right here on this very station. Our coverage begins at 4 o'clock. David Fizdale, ESPN NBA analyst, former head coach of the Grizzlies and Knicks, and, of course, Coach LeBron James as an assistant with the Heat. He joins us here now. L.A. Kid. So, Fizz, this is – I've been saying this, too. Like, this is the best of both my worlds colliding. I would imagine you feel the same.
Yeah, man. I'm so pumped up for this. In a really chaotic year, and knowing how this whole bubble thing was going to work out and all of this other stuff, for it to end up Lakers Heat, we couldn't ask for anything better than that. I think it's going to be an exciting series, and I was telling somebody the other day, I hope they can play 9 games.
Who's the X factor for the Heat, and who is the X factor for the Lakers in this series?
Oh, that's a good question, LZ. I think for the Heat, Goran Dragic continuing to play at the level that he's been playing at, I think is important. I don't know if he can sustain that high a level because he's been playing so great, but, man, why not? But I think he's a extremely key ingredient to the whole thing, and I think probably equally as important is I'm not going to say one guy. I'm going to say it's the small forwards of the Heat and that whole core that has to guard LeBron for the whole series. You know, Crowder, Jimmy Butler, Andre Iguodala, Solomon Hill, those guys are going to be critical in how they compete, do it with discipline, and really try to slow and disrupt LeBron. For the Lakers, I think Rondo is that X factor. I think when Rondo plays well for the Lakers, you can book it. You're not winning that game. It just seems like when he's clicking and he's got the rest of those guys getting involved, when LeBron's out of the game and he's getting LeBron easy baskets in transition and getting AD spin lobs and stuff like that where they make eye contact and connect on plays like that. I think that really lifts their team up. And so I really think Rondo is that guy who really can you know, hammer the Heat if they don't do a good job and you know, getting back against him and really respecting him for what he brings to the table.
David Fizdale with us here. Fiz, with the Lakers, they're such a strong team at getting points in the paint, whether it's off lobs or drives or whatever, right? Like, they're so dominant in that area. We've seen Miami implement different strategies defensively, like building a wall with Giannis. We've seen them go zone heavy with the Celtics. What do you think you should try to do against that paint dominance that the Lakers have?
Well, you know, obviously it starts when the shot goes up, or conversely, when decisions are being made that can lead to turnovers. You do not want to be a team that allows the Lakers to get out in transition. When they can run on you, you might as well just book it. These guys are so dominant if they can get 20-plus points in transition. And so I just think that the whole concept of packing that paint and slowing them down starts with the commitment to getting back on the release of the ball. And if a turnover happens, because you must get shots against them, if a turnover happens, you really, really try to save possessions and get them to you know, have to move the ball multiple passes. And then after that, I think in the half court, you just really have to have a commitment to your principles. Guys guarding on ball have to really compete without fouling, you know, and getting their chest in front of people. I think off the ball, you got to have a foot in the paint all the time and be ready to do two things at once, which is pack the paint and close to a shooter. And then ultimately, the big area I think you got to be aware of, because they're humongous, is the offensive glass, and that's paint points. And you got to just find a way to do a job. And I think the Heat, out of all of the teams that play small, if you watch their games, they do the best job. One, their guards really do a great job of rebounding. But two, they do a great job of tipping the ball away to a teammate when they can't get a rebound. And so that whole game is going to be, you know, I think that's where it all lies, is if the Heat can really keep their chest in front of the Lakers and keep LeBron and AD settling for outside jump shots.
You know, we don't spend a great deal of time talking about Frank Vogel because of the star power of his roster. But as a fellow coach, can you talk about how difficult it is to try to guide a team to a championship round in your first year of meeting the team?
You know, it's interesting you asked that question, because obviously I watched Spo do that with the big three, and it is not easy. What Frank and the staff has done, Lionel Hollins and Kurt Rambis and Jay Kidd, Miles Simon and all those guys, what they've done in their first year to get this team playing the way they have, so unselfishly, so committed to defending, and you know, really being happy for the next guy. That has to be, you know, commended. Frank's a hell of a coach. And I think people knew Frank was a hell of a coach after Indiana. But it's a different challenge, like you're saying, when you get the likes of LeBron and AD, and all of a sudden everybody expects you to win. And dealing with managing those expectations and really putting your team in a position to live up to all of these expectations, I really think Frank has done a superior job of coaching and really – what I love about what he's doing is, and you know, it's that same trait of what Spo has, is they don't care about the credit. You know, they don't want, you know, Frank's not out there beating his chest saying, look at me, I'm winning games. He's just coaching his team and he's letting them do the things that they do well. And he's motivating them and he's using the right things to inspire them. And so, yes, Frank Vogel deserves a ton of credit.
So there are a lot of storylines in this one, as you know, Fizz, and you know a lot of the participants in this one. One of them has been Pat Riley and LeBron, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about this earlier because LeBron was saying that, you know, he was asked if this one means more, and, you know, he gave a very cursory answer about that it's very hard to get here, yada, yada. And then AD said, yeah, this one would mean, like, I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said that, yeah, this one would mean something to him. I don't think there's any doubt because it's them. Now, I would imagine both sides feel that way. And I believe this, and you tell me if I'm wrong, because, again, you know all the parties involved. I've said this for a long time. for whatever issues they may have with each other, LeBron James and Pat Riley's personalities are almost mirror images. How do you feel about that statement by me?
I mean, from the standpoint of really wanting to win, yes. Similar from the standpoint of tacticians of execution and knowledge of the game, absolutely. I do think the beauty of what you're talking about is the fact that Pat won so many rings in L.A. I think that adds a whole nother element to it. Like, yes, it would have been awesome if we could have, you know, when I was in Miami and we could have got to the finals and or the Eastern Conference Finals and played Cleveland that year when we lost to Toronto in the Game 7 to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. Miami-Cleveland, that would have been great. But for whatever reason, because he's in L.A. now and Pat had done, you know, a lot of those jerseys and banners are Pat's in that arena. And so for this to be the showdown on how Miami and LeBron come back together, I think makes it such a special moment in NBA history. And I know both parties, obviously, because of the relationship and the history, have a little extra added incentive to go after this thing. But at the end of the day, when you're talking about championship organizations, you know, as personal as some things may be, even though I don't think it's a serious beef anymore between anybody, I just think that it's still a personal thing to everybody. Nothing is more personal than winning the title. And so nothing's going to come before that to either party. And at the end of the day, you know, I know both teams are going to do everything they possibly can to be holding that trophy.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, you talked about, you know, moving on and sort of embracing where you are now in life. Do you think we're all ready to move on from the comparisons of Jordan and LeBron? Like, largely speaking, I'm not talking about, like, the haters who are just going to hate. But I mean, like, the thoughtful people who get paid to have these sort of conversations. Do you think we're now finally past that, where we can just accept the fact that they're both two great players and they're different,
man,
and it just is what it is?
That's such a great question, LZ, because you're tapping into a feeling I had. I did an interview not too long ago, and somebody was asking me about all of that. And by the time I was done with the interview, I like kind of had this feeling in my stomach, like, what a waste of time. Like, who cares? Like, at the end of the day, you know, when you're in that conversation, no one's going to win the discussion, because if you're a bigger fan of LeBron, you're going to root for LeBron. If you're a bigger fan of Jordan, you're going to root for Jordan. If you're a bigger fan of Kareem or whoever else you want to put in that conversation, that's who you're going to lean towards. And so, you know, they all have done something so amazing and great in the game of basketball. Like, think about what if LeBron James wins this finals and gets finals MVP. Think about what he's accomplished with three different teams. I mean, that is something that I don't care who you are. Like, that's greatness. Like, you just have to define it as greatness. And as you start getting into who's better and all of that stuff, it's just such a waste of energy for me. Like, I'm at the point now that I'm like, when people ask me that question, I'm like, pass.
Yeah, just, right.
You
yeah.
know, it's just, for me, it's like, you know, I just think when you just – why can't we just stop in the moment and just appreciate when people are doing something great? You know, when Kobe Bryant was just doing something, just stop and just appreciate what you're seeing. Art, you're seeing beautiful music play out right in front of you when a guy like Kobe scores 80, you know, and Jordan's dropping 63 and LeBron's getting these super triple doubles and all of them are winning trophies in their own different ways and have MVP, you know, this many MVPs and this many final MVPs. It's just too much to try to add up. Unless somebody's built some algorithm that I don't know about, because otherwise Bill Russell's probably at the top of that algorithm if we go through the computer. So if you really want to argue, let's argue. You know, yeah. What's important, it's always about winning until it ain't, right?
Right.
And yeah. So my thing is just, I think as a basketball community, and I think most people in our that really know feel like I feel, but I think as a basketball community in general, it's fun to talk about, but people need to chill on that, because you're wasting time talking about something and you're not really paying attention to the beautiful thing that's happening in front of you, where you got a 35-year-old guy who had the world put on his shoulders in the ninth grade to be the greatest player ever. He's doing what's necessary to live up to that right in front of your eyes, and you're still arguing, and it's such a waste of time.
David Fizdale with us here, ESPN NBA analyst, and, of course, former coach of the Knicks and the Grizzlies, an assistant with the Heat and LeBron back in those days, L.A. kid. You know, speaking of appreciating stuff, the one thing I really want to appreciate in this series is the battle of the big men. Like, we have AD, who I believe – agreed. AD is, I believe, the best big man in the league, and I think that the next up-and-coming big man who we're seeing kind of develop before our eyes is Bam. What do you make of that matchup?
Oh, my God. You're talking about some of the best that's ever come out of Kentucky. Two unique bigs in their own right. They bring a really defined skill set to the game. They both protect the rim. They both defend. They both have their ways of scoring and impacting the offense. You know, as AD can stretch the floor further, I feel like Bam's a better passer. You know, it's what a unique matchup. And, you know, someone was asking me the other day, like, would you trade a Bam Adebayo for Giannis? And it's like, God, isn't that a tough decision? Like, as good as Giannis is, and you know he's the great MVP Giannis, and it's like, man, but after you watch Bam play and you watch how he really impacts winning, that's just not an easy, like, oh, yeah, let's just make this trade. Like, it's like, hold on for a second. This guy's a winner. And, I call him Udonis 2.0. Because he's like Udonis Haslam from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, from what he believes in team and the Heat and the culture and how he exemplifies that. He is just like UD, except he's bigger and more athletic, and like he does all of this stuff. And it's like, so, man, what a matchup. What a matchup. I think the game is going to be won in that matchup. I think that is, because I think LeBron's going to do what he does. I feel like Jimmy Butler is going to kind of do what he does. But that matchup, I think, is going to define the series and define who holds the trophy.
Well, that means that the Lakers are going to win easily, because the first two games they played this regular season, AD just got whatever he wanted. And Bam struggled.
Well, if all finals was decided in the regular season, LZ, there wouldn't be no reason for us to be on the phone right now.
That's true, bro. That is true.
And see, the other thing that you got to think about, too, is the Heat have added veteran help defenders in Crowder and Iguodala and Solomon Hill, guys that really understand how to be on that weak side and help. Or when it's time to go double an AD when you need it. Or, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to be reliable to doing their job so that AD gets, you know, most likely does not get a lot easy. So that's why I see that it's going to be an interesting matchup.
David Fizdale, ESPN NBA analyst, of course, L.A. kid, coach of the Knicks, the Grizzlies, assistant for the Heat, won championships there, championship assistant coach, and, of course, a great head coach, and we're looking forward to him getting back on the basketball floor. But we do enjoy you hanging out with us, Fizz, so thank you so much for the time.
Can I ask y'all this? Well, y'all didn't say who you had.
I have the Lakers in seven.
I got the Lakers LZ? In five.
You got them in what?
I got them in five.
Wow, that's a bold prediction.
Is it?
I'm going with my underdog Heat, even though I know L.A. and LeBron is going to be mad at me. I think it's going seven, and I want to say, LZ, what you're doing for black people in the movement, you don't talk enough. Keep talking and keep speaking up and keep saying what you got to say, because it's powerful and it resonates.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate it, man. I do try.
Absolutely.
Fizz, always a pleasure, brother. Thank you for always making time for us.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. There he is, David Fizdale. Fizz, that was fun.
Got you guys in seven.
Yeah, he's more a little more optimistic than I am.
Yeah, I'm just really bullish on you can't teach height.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You love big men, and we got to go to break here because Momo's joining us in a second.
She likes big men too.
And you love big men. I remember you and I having arguments about big men all the time back in the day in the morning show. So I know your affinity for post play and post defense. I get it.
Well, you got to have it. You know, when you get so enamored with shooting threes to the point in which you turn down wide open layups because you're still looking for a contested three-pointer, you're doing it wrong. And there have been a lot of teams in this league over these last three or four seasons that have just been doing it wrong. The Lakers have decided, hey, we're bigger than everybody else. Let's score inside too. And guess what? That got us to the finals.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun matchup. I do. I do really think it's going to be a fun matchup. And game one tomorrow, of course, 4 o'clock is when the coverage begins here on 710 ESPN. All right, we're going to get to Momo in 3 minutes, but...
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Sedano and LZ with you here on 710 ESPN. Thanks to David Fizdale for joining us there. Thanks for Amin for joining us earlier. You can subscribe to the Sedano and LZ podcast on Apple Podcasts, the ESPN app, Spotify, Google, wherever you find your podcasts. And you can listen to the entire show there. It's been very Laker heavy. We will talk some Dodgers here too because Momo's here and we can talk anything with Momo. Hello, Momo. Yeah.
What's up, guys?
It's a great day. It's Christmas Eve, actually, if you care.
LZ said it was Christmas Eve. It does feel like Christmas Eve.
I know. I'm excited. The finals.
It's very hot, though. It's a little hot. Even for Christmas Eve in California, it would be a little hot.
Just a little bit. Momo.
Yeah. If
following the Christmas Eve theme.
Oh, okay.
If you reach under the tree and you pull a box out and you unwrap it and you can only pull out one box. Do you want the box to say Lakers champions or Dodgers champions?
Ooh.
What box do you want under your tree most?
Ooh.
You're going to be really surprised with what I say.
Okay.
You're going to say the Kings.
I'm going to say the Dodgers.
Yeah?
I'm going to say the Dodgers, man. They haven't won since 88. Yeah, I'm a baseball girl, man. That's my sport, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I grew up watching the Dodgers. I was real little Momo in 88 when they went. And so, I don't know. Like, even though it's sad that we can't go to the ballpark and all that, like, they've been knocking on that door for 8 years. So close. I think that's the one. That's the one. I mean, Lakers would be amazing. But, like, which person do I open first? I say the Dodgers.
Wow. Bergman said that yesterday too. So it's a more of a sentiment than I thought it would be. I'd love to hear.
Years is a long time.
It is. I think the longevity of it, right, LZ and Momo, that kind of plays a huge factor here.
I mean, think about it. Like LeBron James was in diapers the last time they won a World Series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing too is like the Lakers have been, the Dodgers have been in the World Series twice and lost. In like heartbreaking fashion, you know, like I'll never forget you, Darvish, in game 7. I'll never forget, you know, the Lions cheating Astros, right? Like, I'll never forgive you, Darvish, for that. I know the Lions cheating Astros were part of that, but I'll just still never forgive him for it, you know?
That game 7 there. I'm still calling him you, garbage.
Yeah, LZ is rooting for the Marlins in game 1 tomorrow on ABC.
Wow, just because
he hates Darvish that much.
Wow. I get it. You know, I mean, I feel a little more bad about it knowing that the Astros were stealing his pitches, but still, it's just, I'll never forget that day, that game 7.
Oh, it was just gut wrenching. So I'm with you.
Yeah.
As much as I you know, grew up a Laker fan, love Magic, blah, 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 blah. I've said it 1,000 times. There's something about 32 years for a franchise as well run now and as much as a place that they hold in the sport. It's a long time for them because we're, I mean, it's Yankees and Dodgers, and then it's everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yankees have been winning, and it's time for the Dodgers to get back on track.
Yeah, and I say this, like, knowing how much it would mean to the city of L.A. if the Lakers won. I mean, knowing how much L.A. had its heart ripped out when Kobe passed, like, knowing how much the Lakers mean to this town. Like I get it, you know, and I think that that would be an amazing story, too. But I kind of think they're both going to win.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like 88.
It's very possible. I think it's very possible that both win. The randomness of baseball, though, is the only thing that makes me even more fearful. Like, I think we had the discussion yesterday, like, which one do you think is more likely? And I felt like the Lakers was more likely, mostly because of the randomness of baseball. Like, we've seen.
Yeah, and also the Lakers are already there. They're already in the finals.
Right. And the Dodgers still have to get through all these different rounds. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too many rounds. I don't like this. I don't like this new baseball thing. It's like everybody's in the playoffs now.
Yeah.
It's a participation medal.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's not fair to the truly good teams.
Yes.
That, like, you only get a 3-game series. Like, you have, like, one or two bad starts and, like, or two bad games and, like, your season's over against a team that really shouldn't be in the playoffs.
Right. Right. Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting. Hey, Momo, before we move on to the Lakers series.
Yeah.
The Clippers, something happened over there.
Ooh.
You know, Doc is out. Like, you had a great story today for those that didn't get a chance to see it, you and Om Yong-Masuk on ESPN.com and the ESPN app. What do we know about why this happened and why now?
It was interesting. I think we did the last hit we did. It was, like, right after the Clippers lost, right? And I was like, don't put this on Doc Rivers. I mean, this team just didn't want to be in that bubble. They didn't bring it. They kind of fell apart, and they panicked in every single one of those games, and especially the last 4 minutes of that Game 7, it just looked like – all those players were like deer in the headlights, okay? And I don't know how that's on the coach. If the team just can't get its – the players don't want to be there, and they didn't bring it, and there was a lot of other reasons why. But I'll tell you this, like, everyone I talked to over there as this was unfolding, nobody thought Doc was going to be out. I mean, they thought it would be like a conversation, but nobody had the sense – either inside the Clippers or around the league, that Steve Ballmer would really go and fire Doc Rivers, that he would really go and especially with how important Doc has been to the franchise and to the league as, like, a civil rights leader. I mean, he's an incredible presence and figure in this league. And, like, with what's going on in the world today and, you know, 3 black coaches have already been fired in the NBA this year to take out Doc and, that was a blow. That was a real blow. And I don't think people thought that Steve Ballmer would do that.
I didn't think he would either. I brought it up the week before, I think, in terms of I thought that next season Doc would start on the hot seat.
Yeah.
Because of what happened. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think that Ballmer, to your point, will pull the trigger this off season in the shadows of the NBA finals. But you know, he is not an accidental billionaire.
Yeah.
As far as I know, he, you know, did need loans and, you know, his taxes are all right. And
he's a real billionaire.
so he knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
So he's not going to make this move emotionally.
No.
So he already knows who's going to replace him. He already has had conversations with them, and we're just waiting for the announcement. He didn't fire Doc and then say, okay, what's next? Guys like that, they're that successful, they're not the kind that's going to make an emotional decision like that.
So, Momo, who do you think is a legit candidate for this job?
So I agree with your premise, LZ. I kept thinking, like, well, that was another reason why I didn't think they would fire Doc. And I was like, who are you going to go get that's that much better? Is there anyone on the market right now that you look at and go, oh yeah, that's a star, right? Like, and you know, when Toronto did this with Dwayne Casey, mm-hmm.
they had Nick Nurse lined up, ready to go. He was coach of their G League team, and they knew how good he was. And they knew, like, okay, maybe a fresh set of eyes. And, you know, by the way, it helped that they got Kawhi, okay? But, that you know, they felt like that would really help. But I think with this, I don't know that he has somebody lined up. I would think he does, right? I mean, doesn't that seem like your point rationally is the correct one? But I think they're going to take their time. I talked to a couple coaching agents, you know, yesterday and just said, like, come on, who is it? What do you think? None of them had any sense. One of them suggested to me, like, you know, I think if you're going to replace Doc, you really have to take your time and you can't just, like, hire somebody who's out there. Like, don't be surprised if they go after a sitting head coach that they just think would be a great fit. I mean, you know, if he has somebody lined up, it's a surprise to me and anybody else. Now, the bigger question is, does Doc coach? Because all of a sudden, he just became the most accomplished coach on the market.
Yeah. He'd be nice on an ESPN set somewhere.
I thought
Hell
that
no.
too.
Get back on the sideline, man. Hell no. Go back and get another chip, because right now, the narrative is that you only won a championship because you had those three great players in Boston and that it wasn't you. Don't go run into a booth now, Doc. No, there are teams out there that are like that Orlando team you started with. Young, talented, need someone with some authority to come show them the way. And I think that's a better option for him than saying, I'm going to go into a studio after I got fired by the Clippers.
I mean, he could take a gap year.
Yeah, you could take a gap year. It kind of depends on if he likes any of the openings right now.
Right.
Like, if you look at Houston and say, I know what I would do with that team. Or if you look at Philly and say, yeah, that team can win.
New Orleans.
Right. New Orleans, whatever it is. Like, then you run towards that job. But if there's no job, if there's a job, he has time to be selective. Because I think people feel like he's a really good coach. And I think people feel like he'll get another job. It's just, so he doesn't have to take the first one offered to him.
All right, let's take a break. Let's get into the NBA Finals with Momo on the other side. We also have What You Need to Know all coming up. We are back in 2 minutes. What You Need to Know is brought to you by friends at Morongo. Play it safe. Good times. There is a Major League Baseball update for you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There is a game in progress. The New York Yankees have a 7-2 lead in the bottom of the fifth against the Cleveland Indians. The Tampa Bay Rays won their first game against the Toronto Blue Jays 3-1. Momo is not a huge fan of all these extra wild card games, LZ. What do you make of the extra wild card games? Do you like them or you're not so much?
Not so much. I mean, it's just, I don't like participation medals. I didn't raise my son to collect participation medals. So I'm not going to change that now. So if you were a bad team, especially those teams with losing records, you don't deserve this moment. This isn't for you.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm gonna take the other side of this. I think it's such a strange year, short season. You might as well, like, have the one-off where you have this crazy tournament-style kind of game. Like, you know, I'm okay with it. You know, at least for one season. I wouldn't want – I do think there's going to be an expanded playoffs moving forward. I don't think it's going to be 16 teams. I think it could be 12, right, or maybe even 14. But I don't think you'll have 16, which generally will remove the under 500 part of the equation most years. Next, we have coronavirus has struck the football world. The Tennessee Titans had an outbreak. Notre Dame had an outbreak. LZ, we'll start with you. They have both shut down their facilities for a few days. Are you surprised it took this long, I guess, is the question.
This long for an outbreak?
Yes.
I'm not convinced that this is the first time a franchise in either sport has or a school has dealt with an outbreak. It's just I'm surprised that we found out about it. And maybe because the numbers were so high that they had to shut things down, they couldn't conceal it. But I'm pretty sure – I'm confident in saying that they've had other players individual and they just handled it without the media knowing it.
Interesting.
Yeah, that makes sense. What do you think? I don't disagree with that. That sounds right. You know, it's interesting with those guys because, you know, I'm more concerned about the NFL outbreak than I am about the college outbreak. The college outbreak to me is inevitable, like totally inevitable. That was going to happen, is going to happen continually. But in the NFL, they did a pretty damn good job of containing this. And we got to see if the Vikings have it now, if there's any reports of that, to see if any other players get it, because, you know, they keep testing for a couple days. But the NFL is the real litmus test in terms of whether or not we're going to be able to have the full season, right? Like college football, I think, like, you know, one school here, one school there is going to be a problem. But this is the NFL where I thought they had all the protocols in place to avoid something like this.
Lemon pepper wings, girl, undefeated.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. All right, that's what you need to know. Presented by Morongo. Play it safe. Good times. You're listening to KSB in Los Angeles. Momo hanging out for another segment here. So, Momo, let's talk NBA Finals here.
Okay.
So, you picked what?
I did Lakers in six. Okay. I decided that I have picked the Lakers all season long since the preseason.
Yep.
And the reason being...
You, me, Ohm, and McMiniman were the only four.
Are we the only
originally
ones? Wow.
You, me, McMiniman, and Ohm were the only four.
And you know what kills me, by the way?
Lakers.
Every time I'm on social media, I'm like, hey, everybody's like, didn't you pick the Clippers? I'm like, no, I actually didn't. Can you please just go look that up? Like, I really didn't. Like, I can go show you the receipts. Like, I have receipts all over the place, okay? We've multiple times. But it always came down to this. In a seven-game series, who are the best players? Who has the best players on the team? And I think LeBron and AD are the two best players. Like, and I trust LeBron more than I trust anybody else. Like, I mean, we can go into how the Heat have such great shooters and great chemistry, what a great coach Eric Spoelstra is. But you know what? The Lakers have LeBron and AD.
It's pretty simple.
That's what boiled it over for me. Now, I'd pick the Lakers in seven because I am the basketball nerd in me. Is absolutely genuinely curious to see what Eric Spoelstra puts out there defensively for game one. Because I think that from game to game, there is not a guy that is currently coaching. You know, Pop is in this conversation too. But I think Eric has even surpassed him from adjustments, from a game to game adjustments. Now, Nick Nurse may be the best in-game adjusting, but game to game with time to really prepare – I feel like Eric is the kind of the cream of the crop right now. So just from and LeBron will probably figure it out. It may take him a little bit, but even a few minutes in one game could cost you a game, and that's all you're hoping for if you're them.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for, and you've said this to me when we've been texting about the Heat throughout this playoff run. Like, they do have something special going. They do remind us of, like, those 2004 Pistons where, you know, maybe Jimmy's the Chauncey of this group and Bam is the – Rasheed Wallace or the Jim Ben Wallace or whatever. They just play really well together. They're just really in a good place. I think they have so many different ways of beating you, and they have a really good coach. But ultimately, like, who are you gonna take? LeBron and AD or Jimmy and Bam?
But Momo and George, we talked about this. I hear people talking about 2004 Pistons when it comes to this Miami Heat squad, and I can see some of that. Not a lot, but some of it. Because I think you're underestimating the age difference between these two squads. But the other thing, too, is that Lakers squad that lost in 2004, if they would have gone to the obvious mismatch with commitment, the Pistons might get swept. It was the simple fact that they did not feed Shaq the way they should have. And the numbers, and I don't like to hang everything on numbers, but the numbers bear this. Like, Shaq should have had the ball more. This Lakers squad, this team here, won't have to worry about them not maximizing their talent. They're not going to have any jealousies. They're not going to have anybody trying to be the alpha, and so you can't have the ball, or I need to prove a point against Tayshaun Prince or something like that. They're not going to have any of that. If AD is rolling and they can't do anything about it, trust, they're going to feed AD. He won't need to beg for the ball the way that Shaq needed to beg for the ball against a 6'9 Ben Wallace in 2004.
It's a great point. I mean, that Laker team, I was a little baby covering that team. You know, like I didn't know anything. And so I think it was maybe like the first or second year I'd ever been in an NBA locker room. And I went in there and we'd always just go talk to Karl Malone because he would just sit at his locker all the time. And he was like your go-to, right? And he was always icing his feet like forever after games, right? And I remember covering that team and like, I don't think I knew how different that was from a typical team. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I knew how dysfunctional that team was. And now having covered so many other teams, you're like, oh my goodness, that team was a nightmare. That Laker team was just an absolute nightmare. So it's not surprising they lost. They had all of this stuff going on beneath the surface. They were cracking, you know, I mean, so this Laker team, this is like the no drama team. We have to like come up with stories, you know, we have to like find some drama, you know, there's not really any drama on this team.
So, which is the matchup you're most intrigued by?
I would say Bam. Like who, you know, I think Andre Iguodala and Jimmy are going to probably guard LeBron. I think what the Lakers, what Miami does with Bam, like does Bam guard AD or do they put like Jay Crowder on him? Does AD guard Bam? Does he go into the block and try to draw fouls? Like that's going to be a real showdown. Or does Spo go totally different and just put Bam on LeBron? Like Bam's a hell of a defensive player. Maybe he can guard 1-5. I don't know. That's to me, like, you know, which way you go. I was talking to a head coach last night and they said if they were coaching the Lakers, they'd go big against Miami. They would go with the big lineup. They would play Dwight out there or JaVale and put them on Bam. And so Anthony Davis can just be roaming around and make Jay Crowder guard him or something, right? But we'll see. We'll see. That's where this matchup looks really interesting to me.
Yeah, I got Dwight Howard as my X factor. I think he's going to play 20 minutes, and I think he's just going to wreak havoc all over whatever they're trying to do. Because physically, there's just nothing they can do to match up with him either.
Mm-hmm.
Not without a gang yeah. boxing him out.
Yeah. I mean, look, Dwight is old, okay?
Yep.
By NBA standards. And let me tell you something. I did not know this. Did you know what happened to Dwight last year? Do you remember how it got reported?
Like all the things that he went through. Yeah.
Literally, was like, it got reported as like he had a butt muscle injury or something.
Correct.
Like, remember that?
Yeah.
Right. No, yes. You know what he had? He had a reoccurrence of his lower back injury. He had another back surgery. Like, he had, like, that sciatica where you can't even walk. And for him to, go get that back surgery again, so it's the first back surgery he had, I think it's called a laminectomy. He had that right before he got traded to the Lakers. He came back too fast. He's really never been the same athlete. But then to then have that again after – you know, all of this when you're, what is he, 34, 35 now? Yeah. And come back from that back injury and still have this kind of a season, get himself into the kind of shape he's in. Man, I don't think people fully appreciate what he's done.
No, oh, I agree with that. Yeah, I do agree with, from a historical standpoint, I don't think we have understood what his body has been through and what he was when he was in his prime. Like, we forget that. Yeah.
And not just his body, though. I mean, he's had a lot of pain from a variety of different ways that he's had to manage through all of this over the last 12 months as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whatever you thought of Dwight when he left the Lakers the first time, I've seen, and I've talked to him a lot over the years, and obviously this year as well, I've seen very little evidence of that Dwight Howard being present in a Laker uniform this year.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I mean, I still think he checks his Twitter mentions, okay? I still think he's, you know, sensitive and all the other things that we, you know, said about him before. But you know what the biggest difference with Dwight is like, he's not trying to be the man. He's just trying to be part of the team.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest difference. I saw him today on The Jump talking about that and just kind of – Curtis, do we have that cut about his role? Do you have that for me? All right, let me hear that so Momo and LZ can hear it as well.
You know, at first, you know, as a player, you know, you're like, man, I want to play. I feel like I could do this, I could do that, I could help here and help there. But then I realized, like, I have to learn from all my mistakes in the past, you know, and sometimes the universe gives you so many different tests until you pass it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was one of the biggest tests for me, is just always remain humble, stay patient, continue to work extremely hard. And when you get that moment, just give everything you got.
Yeah, and I just think, to your point, Momo and LZ, like, his attitude had to change at some point.
Yeah, like, he had to just – once people stopped expecting Dwight to be a superstar, he was fine. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's not – he doesn't have to be a superstar. He's a role player. And I think back on this, like, you know, Kobe and I used to talk about this when Dwight was on the team the first time around. And he was like, you know what Bill Russell was? He was a great defensive player. He was a hell of a rebounder. And he scored in the low post. That's all we need from Dwight. Just be Bill Russell out there, man. Like, you don't need to be Hakeem Olajuwon. You don't need to be Amari Stoudemire. You don't need, just go be Bill Russell. That's your skill set. And I think that's what frustrated the Lakers. I know it frustrated Kobe when Dwight was here the first time. Is that he felt like he needed to be the successor to Kobe right then and there.
Yes.
And now he's just like, no, man, I'm just part of the team. And it's been really, I don't know, heartwarming to watch, I think.
It's a great story. And this roster, as good as the stories are with Miami, and they do have some beautiful stories, whether it's the, you know, the sort of the, I don't want to say that he did anything bad, but just Jimmy Butler's been validated. Let's just put it that way.
Yes.
And then when you look at, like, Goran Dragic was, like, one of the first players that Pat Riley, like, traded for to try to get, to try to rebuild things. And the fact that he's still on this roster as they finally made it to the finals is a testament to him. And then, obviously, Hero, and they got a lot of great stories. But the Lakers, we got some scrappy dogs, too, man. And we've got players that have been through some stuff. Caruso came up the rough side of the mountain, and now he finds himself an important piece to a championship. That's a great story. Dwight's a great story. Rajon Rondo is a great story.
Yeah.
So by the way, I'm charging stories extra. Too.
I'm charging extra rent on Rondo Island. Can I get some extra rent? Because I was there first. Right?
I was there.
Oh, listen, there? I was last to get there. It wasn't until Haberstroh gave me that crazy stat about him in the playoffs that I finally just turned and said the hell with it. Do you know that stat?
Oh, I think I've heard it, but go ahead and tell me again.
Rajon Rondo has the biggest jump in regular season PER, player efficiency rating, to the postseason in NBA history. And the number two player on that list is Hakeem Olajuwon.
And the reasons why, and I wrote a piece for the LA Times, I believe it was last week or this week, I don't know, I just write. But I talked with Rondo, but I also spoke with other coaches, including, you know, Doc, of course, and Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them to explain playoff Rondo, and they did say, they did it in a way that made all the sense in the world, which is, in the regular season, you're bouncing from team to team to team, traveling. In the postseason, you get to study. Mm-hmm. And playoff Rondo is a byproduct of him being able to employ his intelligence that the regular season doesn't afford him the same sort of time. So he gets an opportunity to study film on one team for at least a week and figure out their tendencies and maximize what he can do against what they like to do. And that's the reason why, at least according to the man I spoke to, as well as Rondo, why there exists a playoff Rondo. It is simply, he gets to finally show off what a brilliant basketball mind he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you, man. He is, like, and that's why, like, you know, we go all the way back to LeBron saying in the finals, you know, in Cleveland, you know, we need some more basketball IQ. It comes down to basketball IQ. And, like, you could just tell he loves Rondo's game. Like, LeBron has been a Rondo supporter the whole time. He's played against him his whole career. You know, obviously they had a lot of history together. And it's game respect game. Like, when you just see those subtle little plays that Rondo makes and he sees and he knows, like, that's, I think a player like LeBron, where we have been blessed to see, you know, most of the time when you get to that level of basketball IQ and feel for the game, like, your body doesn't come with you, right? You're like too old for your body to execute. But somehow LeBron has extended his own personal window just long enough that we get to see the culmination of, like, basketball IQ and supreme athleticism. I don't know how much longer it lasts, but, you know.
Enjoy it while it's here.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Momo, thank you for hanging out with us and always making time for us. We appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. No, it's fun. I'm excited. This is like me being hyped. You hear it in my voice?
Should I? Can you play me a little Shakira?
Well, we don't have Laura today, so I don't know if Curtis can get to that quickly.
If you can get me some Shakira, I can really get that going.
Yeah, no? We got to run though because we're hard up against the traffic.
All right, I'll just play it on my iPhone afterwards. I'll just dance by myself.
I could sing for you.
Yeah, okay, go ahead, Elsie, so sing for her.
Your hips don't lie.
Stop it.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that. Come on.
All right, Momo, thank you.